not a Republican. He, too, points out the joy this decision could bring in the Kremlin.
The president's dismissal of General MacArthur represents the Kremlin's greatest victory since Yalta. It greatly strengthens the Soviets' position in Asia and greatly weakens the position of the United States. This action by the president enormously increases the danger of all-out war, and particularly endangers our position in Japan. No one should be surprised if Japan, the Philippines, and much of the rest of East Asia now come under Soviet control, unless even more of America's limited military strength is thrown into action against it. This move by the administration is likely to do just the opposite of what they have said they are trying to do. It will expand rather than contain the war in Korea. Because the removal of the number one bulwark against communist expansion in Asia will cause millions of people there rightly to conclude that communist victory is practically inevitable and that they might as well get on the red bandwagon right away. My concern is not for General MacArthur. He is a giant whom the pygmies cannot tolerate because he has been so consistently right and they so consistently wrong. His place in history is firmly secure. History will vindicate him and will condemn his opponents who threw away in 5 short years the magnificent victory in the Pacific which he and 4 million Americans won at such great cost. My concern is for the peace and security of the United States and its families and homes and children. Few people seem to realize the completely unique prestige and confidence which MacArthur commanded in Asia, especially in Japan. His removal is likely to open the way for the communists to chip away Japan's faith in us and in the United Nations and let the communists take over. The peril we now face is so grave that the Congress, as the body ultimately responsible for the safety of our nation and its armed forces, must immediately call General MacArthur before it to present his views in full. The Congress and the country cannot afford not to have the benefit of the views of that man whose record proves greater understanding of the whole Far East and greater wisdom and skill in dealing with its peoples than any other person in our nation.
General MacArthur was born 71 years ago in Arkansas, in a district represented today by Brooks Hayes, respected member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, who now comments,
"It is my great privilege to represent the congressional district in which General Douglas MacArthur was born. My people have the greatest admiration for him. Consequently, there is disappointment, of course, in his replacement. Still, we must all remember that the decision is an executive one, not political or legislative, and Congress must avoid entering the controversy in a way that creates disunity in an hour of great peril. It is obvious, I think, that the purpose of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the State Department is to avoid an extension of the war in Korea. And until we are prepared to adopt a policy sustaining General MacArthur's specific position, we must withhold criticism, and we must seek to achieve the unity that the United Nations troops need at this crucial time. I trust that judgments will be moderate, and that we will maintain a consistent position. It is consistent to hold that General MacArthur's place in history is secure, that he is entitled to his great reputation as a general and as a man, and to hold at the same time that a unified command, militarily speaking, is essential to success, and that General Ridgway's appointment is consequently not an injustice to General MacArthur."
There's no substitute for experience, and one of the best qualified military men in the House of Representatives is a man who became a legend during World War II, a fighting Marine, General James Devereux, now a member of Congress from Maryland's 2nd District. The hero of Wake Island summed up his views in just about a minute.
"As an old soldier, General MacArthur knew there was a possibility that he would be relieved of command if he spoke out, as do all people in the military service, as was so recently demonstrated in the case of Admiral Denfeld. I agree to the wisdom of our governmental setup, where the military are subordinated to the civilian authority. Still, there are times when, in the best interests of our country, it behooves persons of MacArthur's stature to speak up, especially when they are so eminently qualified as in this instance. I believe MacArthur is being sacrificed in an effort to throttle any criticism of the Truman administration. I venture to say that if more qualified people had voiced their opinions during the post-war period, especially in respect to our rapid demobilization, we would not be facing such world conditions we have before us today. Thank you.
And a freshman senator, Idaho's Senator Welker, was shot. He told us,
"The firing of General MacArthur by the president is, in my opinion, a tragic, shocking, and I fear a disastrous and unwarranted act. It may very well mean the end of Japan. It may well be the end of Formosa and the Philippine Islands. God pity our boys fighting in Korea, and God pity those who have given their lives in Korea, and those who have been wounded. What explanation can be made to them when they are told that General MacArthur was fired outright for seeking more aid to them? I can only say, in credit to General MacArthur, that he stood in his finest hour when he received the word of his discharge. The American people must and will be heard on this act."
A Republican member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Lawrence Smith of Wisconsin, said,
"The dismissal of General MacArthur means appeasement of communism and of British and French policies in the Far East. The American people are now on notice that Mr. Acheson has prevailed as against General MacArthur. It also means a stalemate in Korea and the ultimate loss of all of Asia to communism. This day is blacker than Pearl Harbor."
And a member of the House Armed Services Committee, Illinois' Melvin Price, pointed out the need for civilian control of foreign and domestic policy.
"This is a matter of discipline. No military man is bigger than the Department of Defense. Most important, no military man is bigger than his country. General MacArthur has served his nation well. But even General MacArthur, with his great prestige, cannot place himself above the Constitution of the United States. We have a civilian government. Civilians direct our foreign and domestic policy. President Truman's courageous action today was a step towards continuing this grand tradition of civilian control in America."
And so it goes. For the most part, party line reactions, some more extreme than the other. Now let's quite briefly get up to date on this vital change of command. Tonight, of course, over this network, President Truman will explain the administration position. The joint resolution that was introduced in both the House and the Senate, in the House has been referred to the Rules Committee. The chairman of the Rules Committee, Ed Off Sabbath, Democrat of Illinois, has said that his committee may take it up on Friday. However, he doesn't think the Republicans have enough votes to pass it. Mr. Truman's decision to take his decision to the nation came shortly after MacArthur agreed to appear before this joint session of Congress, if it is so decreed. MacArthur could arrive here in Washington if the invitation was formalized in about 3 weeks. Meanwhile, the president has held a top-level foreign policy conference with Secretary of State Acheson and Ambassador John Foster Dulles, amid rumors of a new Korean peace offer to communist China. Mutual will continue to bring you the latest developments in the Far Eastern situation. Your reporter has been Joe McCaffrey in Washington.
This is the world's largest network, the Mutual Broadcasting System.